Chapter 2. Embarkation.
Lord Sarkis, Primaris Kano begs for your summons.
The deal was set. He broke it by stealing my feast. He can rot in his tower and be glad we haven't placed him on a wall.
He certainly fancies himself an artful fellow.
Then paint him a new face, but leave him where he is.
He's prettier than most. Can I have him?
Kano will be the final meal at my ascension. Let him be.
There's been rumor of another rogue.
Another Primaris?
I can't say. Beware the underhive of Tertius.
You dare warn me away from my own domain. Did you forget your name?
I have, but I remember yours. You are the Bloodthorn.
I am Sarkis.
Your two brothers say the same.
As is their right, but only one will place our throne upon Aegea V.
As you predicted, the Loyalist Guard forces fade quickly without their savants to counter the Fell Guard.
Tell Corvin to watch for incoming replacements. Nothing else matters.
Corvin has grown bored scouting the supply drops.
He has received his payment. If he can't perform, tell him I've got other jobs far more agonizing.
Primaris Rovira spelled things out to us following our jump into the Aegea system. Her source was the Warmaster himself, and that fact alone should have been a hint, but it was lost in her succinct tone. Ignited by a chaos cult, a rebellion had been eating the planet of Aegea V alive for more than a year. By leveraging untold deals with the forces of a blood god, the minions of a warp druid named Sarkis had split the planet into warring halves and thirds. The druid's murderous forces brought ruin to many an Imperial Guard unit and wholesale slaughter to any city that fell under their control. To the blood cult, Imperial citizens were cattle, and the hive cities were merely pens to hold them. To Warmaster Calvain Materio, the planet of Aegea V was a key source of supply for the coming crusade. Its eventual loss would set back his planning by years. In the ongoing standoff between Loyalist and traitor forces, each side planned their next moves, calculating what could be stolen rather than bought. Billions of citizens lived in the contested hive clusters, some loyal, some not. In the fallen cities, Loyalists remained hidden among the city's deepest sectors, hoping for a reprieve while in the Loyalist cities. Countless traitors waited for their chance to strike a blow against the established rulers or the infrastructure that held them in place. First among the planet's incredible anatomy, the Great Rift was best described as a man-made canyon of godlike proportions. 2 miles deep, 5 miles wide, and 3,000 miles long, it bisected the supercontinent of a planet tottering on the edge of ruin. The rift had begun as a mining operation and morphed into a strategic channel for energy production, transportation, and communication. It had its own weather system, canals, and reservoirs. Spaceports lined its edges. More than that, the rift was the dividing line between Chaos and Imperium control. The Imperial Loyalists still held all the territory west of the Great Rift, but the unthinkable had occurred in the east. Imperial Guard and Planetary Defense Forces had collapsed, surrendering or switching sides under the weight of the rebellious druids' mind-bending assault. Bridges across the rift had been dropped before the rebels could capture the remaining hive clusters that guarded their eastern ends. By cutting off any retreat, the move left the last of the Imperial forces on the rift's eastern edge, fighting desperately for their lives. Primaris Rovira made her final point and didn't hold back. We'd be landing in the thick of it. She had 3 fledgling Psyker platoons, each assigned to a different theater of deployment on Aegea V. The northernmost hive cluster, Jessamine, was entirely in Loyalist hands east of the rift. It would be a jumping-off point for the Imperial Guard's upcoming counter-offensive. 2,000 miles to the south, the 7 hive cities of the Cantona cluster mirrored Jessamine. The guard forces in each zone would be reinforced in an attempt to break out and encircle the druids' forces in a pincer movement. Dead center between Jessamine and Cantona, Gaul was the 3rd Imperial holding along the front, and the one most likely to be overrun. All but one of the hive cities in the cluster had already fallen, leaving only Gaul Primus with its back to a derelict spaceport, a missing bridge, and the Great Rift. Given the center's failing position, Warmaster Materio was rerouting guard units originally planned for Gaul to the other clusters, bolstering the planned offensive. If the last Gaul city fell in the meantime, the entire cluster would be annihilated from orbit, killing hundreds of millions and leaving nothing but 6 mammoth tombs for the forces of Chaos. To call it the short straw seemed crass. Gaul was my destination. We were the replacements for a gutted Psyker company. Our mission was to preserve the toehold, keeping the enemy's center occupied while the jaws of the Emperor snapped shut around it from the north and south. To an unblooded Psyker, it sounded simple enough. We only had to survive. Never had I been more wrong. As one of Rovira's up-and-coming funnels, I amplified the warp energies of my chosen arcs and sent them out into the world with devastating effect. The warp leaked into our souls as dark energy, a spark that was deviously intelligent yet weak of will. The warp collided with the mundane universe in spectacular and often unpredictable ways, making Psykers a highly sought-after commodity on the empty shelves of war. Everything from Primaris Rovira was a reminder of who I was, how I'd gotten here, and where I was going. As my mentor, she taunted me for my silver aura and eyes, saying I was too damn pretty for my own good. The rare color made her nervous, and the fact that she'd named me a whole number was as fitting as the control collar around my neck. With my collar's wand, she could track my health and location, unlock the collar, or ignite its dense explosive charge. Our relationship was honest and raw, and I valued it for the clear direction it offered. 13 was an ill-fated number. Rovira never toted more than 11 in a war-bound retinue because of it. Having more would have opened the door to fate. Casualties were common, especially in the ranks of the Psyker arm of the Imperial Guard. Besides that, the Valkyrie gunship could only fit 12 comfortably in its passenger bay. The rear ramp's jump seat should have remained folded and vacant, if not for the Commissar sharing our ride to the front. We were the reinforcements needed to help stabilize the line, and Junior Commissar Geronimo Passingen had been sent along to stabilize us. At least that's how he viewed it. To me, well, I didn't need another reason to resent the Commissariat. I already had plenty. Parked in a sleep trance, my body was strapped in between fellow savants Tempe Azar and Balti Kane. Tempe was a feisty year younger than me, Kane too. They were the lead Psykers for our platoon's two arcs, one bioelectric and one telekine. Each arc had 5 skill-aligned Psykers. As security lead, my job was to make sure our gunship landed safely with the correct number and the same vibrant cast of colors. While my physical body was resting, my astral form lurked in a corner of the cramped bay, watching the team in the one chair that should have remained empty. Our Valkyrie gunship flew along within the stream of Imperial Guard supply aircraft that provided a thin lifeline to the Loyalist defenders. We were heading to the Gaul cluster and its shrinking encirclement. Gaul Primus was the only city still under Imperial control, with a ring of 5 fallen sister cities bleeding out around it. Holding the enemy's stare like a priceless gem or a handhold to be stomped off the edge of a cliff, the Gaul theater would be my first taste of war, if we got there. An amber light illuminated the passenger bay. The 5-minute warning was met with nervous smiles all around. We'd trained together for the past year and knew our roles inside and out. Primaris Rovira didn't care to give orders while juggling 100 points of energy in her head. She was a bit of a show-off, frowning in concentration as she maintained our craft's invisibility for the final leg into Gaul. In a world of solely mundane eyes, it was the perfect cover. Unfortunately, Rovira's effort had gotten the wrong kind of attention. In a freshly tailored guard savant uniform, dark blue over gray panels of ceramite body armor, I was nearing the ripe age of 20 as the bottom fell out of our gunship. Being physically asleep, I barely noticed the unexpected drop, the sudden screams of my peers, or the pale gray look on the junior commissar's face as our warbird plummeted. Security detail had its perks and an entirely different point of view. A ghost of a different kind had arrived to ruin our first day on the planet of Aegea V. The ethereal interloper, an enemy savant in astral form, wore an expectant smile and dripped energy the color of congealed blood as he appeared into the Valkyrie's passenger bay. The foe had hit the jackpot in terms of high-value targets, but his discovery distracted him a moment too long. Blood red and silver energy simply don't mix. While the unwanted visitor was reveling in their imminent kill, I buried a psychic spear of silver energy into their core. With its attention fully in hand, I yanked the foe sideways, taking the fight outside the aircraft as the Valkyrie's engines faltered. More warp energy flowed in from my personal reserve, backing me for the dire mid-air confrontation. In my eyes, the source of the foe's power was obscene. An astral hound, an entity of the warp, had marked him and moved in, sharing ownership of his mind and flooding his soul with warp-tainted power. By chaining the enemy psyker, the beast had given him the ability to hunt in astral form. Warp hounds were hunters and scouts, not warriors. They feasted on easy kills, not confrontations, and loathed being treated as prey. In this case, they'd picked the wrong target. As a sanctioned psyker, I'd spent the past 2 years learning how to defend myself from psychic attacks. Toss in a lifetime analyzing the nature of pecking orders, and I knew that first impressions were key. I never had a chance to forget what it was like to be chained, and I couldn't stomach the eyes of one that had openly accepted the darkest fate of humankind. Yes, I looked, and for the rogue psyker there was no going back. The enemy sapper barked and lashed out with a counterstrike that splashed against my shield. The raw red alien energy burned me like an open flame. I could have fully blocked the strike, but wanted a taste of what we were up against. The psychic pain woke me up with its welcome. This wasn't a simulation. This wasn't a test. It was war. The chain of silver connecting us should have been the first of the creature's concerns, but it was focused on the plummeting Valkyrie and the engines it had disabled. Given enough time, the hound would win the fight by default as the transport hit the ground 2 miles below and my physical body disintegrated. I was never that generous or slow. My astral lance replied like the scream of a War Master's ghost. Silver fire exploded down the line in a focused frenzy, engulfing the trespasser's astral body, shredding its being, the unreal rider, and the cords of energy that held everything together. The rogue scout wouldn't be waking up from a distant nap. The Valkyrie's engines hummed back to life as I returned to my physical body. Rovira reassured our pilots and sent the supply fleet into a holding pattern 50 clicks back. All of our gear was on one of those other birds. Our gunship accelerated, regaining all that it had lost in altitude, and the bay's amber light switched to red, signaling 1 minute out. We began to unbuckle for a quick departure.
Five.
Rovira didn't even look back. A rogue psyker chained to a warpound. Neither remain.
So the Felguard have their own savants. I wonder what else they might have in store.
That the Primaris reveled in surprises wasn't a comfort to anyone. Rovira stood and spoke to our whole cadre.
We're going in hot. I'll take the telekines and keep a tactical shield over our heads. Five will take the lightning arc and keep his eyes pointed outward. We're landing well behind the front lines, more than a mile from Gaul Primus. But if the enemy has already spotted us, they might take another shot. Be ready for anything. Keep your personal shields at full power until we make it out of the drop zone and into the city.
I didn't know war, but I knew how unpredictable the Agents of Chaos could be. I'm familiar with welcoming committees. Keep your helmets on and your shields maxed until I say we're clear, and keep your eyes open for blood-red auras. We all wore the guard's finest body armor. Our visored helms reacted to incoming light and sonic attacks. A rapid exchange of energy might blind or deafen us without that extra protection. Beyond that, I had a self-healing ceramite breastplate for protection, comfort, and style. The platoon wore our unit's insignia, a black and silver flame, and the maroon stripes of the savant arm of the Imperial Guard. With this being our first war, we would officially be ranked as militant savants the moment our boots touched the contested ground around Gaul. The pilot announced,
"You'll have 5 seconds to disembark once the ramp drops. I don't want to sit here and burn."
He wasn't pleased with the lighting while the rest of the Imperial gunship circled at a safe distance. The supply craft, when they finally came in, wouldn't even stop. They would skim the spaceport's level ground and drop their loads out the back. Rovira spoke evenly, as if she was sitting in the cockpit with the crew.
"Commander, neither do we. Keep your engines in check until we're clear and trust a Primaris to protect you."
A single click came back over the intercom, acknowledging the order. The Valkyrie banked hard right as it reached the clifftop, readjusting thrusters downward as it skidded sideways through the air. The maneuver brought us to a momentary halt on the southwestern edge of the Gaul Cluster's defunct spaceport. The loading ramp hovered 2 feet off the ground as the back gate dropped. Heads down, we all sprinted, jumped onto the field, and veered toward the Hive City in the distance. Within seconds, the first explosive enemy rounds whistled overhead, hammering into Primaris Rovira's impenetrable umbrella. She split her focus, keeping the barrier of energy intact above us while giving the gunship a telekinetic shove out over the cliff's edge. It plummeted to safety before leveling out for a fast run home. I was sure the pilot would thank her later. The spaceport sitting on the rift's edge was a priceless yet derelict resource, denied to both sides of the conflict. Being within range of enemy artillery, it was inoperable, yet heavily guarded by Gaul's planetary defense force. Any transports carrying heavy armor or mechanized reinforcements would have to use it. With a dwindling toehold on the cluster, it was doubtful the Loyalists would live long enough to need them. On the far side of the Great Rift, miles to the west, guard artillery thumped out a response to the enemy's incoming rounds. The counter-battery fire took full advantage of the bait we provided on the backside of Gaul Primus. As the impacts around and above us slowed, heads popped up from a nearby trench and signaled our way toward safety. By the time we got there, the enemy artillery had quit firing altogether. I examined the waiting squad of PDF. They looked haggard but clean, untainted. Turning to the junior commissar, I pointed into the trench. Make sure they're loyal before anyone else jumps in. In the distance, a red blotch had appeared. Another trespasser, halting a half mile to the south, a direction perpendicular to our path into the city of Gaul Primus. That there was only one blotch this far behind our lines inferred plenty about the enemy's confidence or frame of mind. I pointed out the foe. Primaris, a welcoming committee awaits. I still held plenty of dark energy from the earlier encounter and was eager to burn it off. Rovira scanned the threat.
Five, do you know who or what that is?
No, but that's what I'm going to find out. I circled the supply trench and jogged southward, listening to the skies. That's how I would have played it. Lure an enemy away from the relative safety of its tactical shield and drop a ton of Feistline explosives on their head. The enemy watcher remained in place as I approached. A slight breeze carried the stench of blood iron and rotting meat, forcing me to stop 10 yards shy of the tainted being. This wasn't a sapper or a scout. The strength of its presence assaulted my mind and my sinuses, updating my view. Its blood-red aura matched that of the astral hunter that challenged us on the way in, but its putrid presence held more than one dark soul. "Are you lost?" I said. "The front lines are miles east." The creature replied with the voice of an out-of-tune siren.
"The front lines are wherever we decide."
Who is we? There was more than one entity present for our conversation, but I didn't think they held the deciding vote on anything.
"The Bloodthorn rules this sector. I am the Herald, here to call you home."
The Watcher's teeth were like the tips of knives, and it bled as it spoke, adding a gurgle to its unreal grin. A mile to my left, the deep blue shimmer of a protective force field blanketed Gaul Primus. That alone inferred that the Imperial forces still controlled the city and the surrounding landscape. But perhaps I had assumed too much. I replied, "Can the Bloodthorn crack an energy shield?"
"From the inside, anyone can. Gaul Primus will follow the fate of its sister cities."
The Herald proudly dribbled a stream of blood down its chin, punctuating every sage word. The Hive Cluster sheltered nearly a billion citizens across the six dense cities. That five had fallen was a catastrophe of humanity beyond my comprehension. The event offered the enemy untold resources in arms and sacrificial blood that opened doors to darker entities. But that wasn't what I was asking, or what the Herald was offering in return. The interloper was the bait for a simple trap. His bleeding tongue had given it away. "Herald, I wasn't speaking to you but to the hunters cloaked behind you. Why do they hide like prey?" Sure, I could goad with the best of them. Some called it a talent and stood clear. My words had the intended effect. Three shadows appeared in the scattered brightness of a windswept, hazy day, each adorned with black cowls, bolt pistols, and the long, straight blades favored by the Imperial Commissariat. My mouth watered at the unreal sight. I couldn't see their faces but felt their familiar frozen sneers. They might have worn mundane armor, but I couldn't tell for sure. Reality seemed to bend around them as if they straddled the veil between our universe and the Immaterium. These were the deadly beasts, the Felguard, that we'd been warned about. They didn't belong here or anywhere else. Before they could act, I barked out a command. "Tell me your true name."
"We are Conagon. We are the three.
Their mouths didn't move as they spoke. It was as if a single entity existed within and around them, vibrating the air. They were mindless cosmic butchers. Trophy hunters. I spat on the ground and took a step back. Mere poachers. I have two different auric shields to augment my Imperial Guard body armor, and I can mask the presence of either. The more common shield can block any psychic attacks or unreal intrusions. It uses little to no energy and mainly keeps me sane. My other body shield is made for war. Its scales layer on like the skin of a warped demon, stopping everything short of a ton of physoline. To be fair, it might stop that too, but I hadn't tested the scenario. With the Herald's escort on hand, I shifted my psychic armor into war mode. The Herald tried to reclaim its place in the conversation, saying,
"The three are here to deliver a message to those that would hold out hope to Gaul Primus."
Three swords were drawn as the Fell Guard blurred forward. I could never move that fast, but I didn't have to. They thought they had the drop on me and the advantage, 3-on-1, but I had 5 reasons to resist their touch. I didn't hold back. 3 bolts of warp-laden lightning exploded outward from my shield, birthing plasma, snapping swords, and removing the upper halves of each assassin. Still as a statue, the Herald took a shower in a stiff dose of gore. The blood seemed like a gift to it, and the creature bowed, offering its thanks. I'd come to deliver a message as well. "Tell the Bloodthorn that 5 rejects its presence. A bitter harvest is about to begin. Do it now." The Herald reacted, racing away to the east. Why would an entity of chaos heed a loyalist grunt? The whistle of incoming artillery might explain it. Feth, but I should have seen that coming.